Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hi, everyone. Just a quick note that aside from our usual filthy language, this episode covers baby reindeer in its totality. So if you haven't finished watching, you may want to skip this and save it for later. Also, some triggers to be aware of: sexual assault, rape, diet culture, and stalking. Finally, I just want to say this was really hard to cover because there is so much intensity baked into these episodes and there's a lot to talk about. Steph and I really did our best, you know, but at the end of the day, we come to everything with our own lens and we hope that we were able to provide a place where we can talk about those other lenses that we sometimes encounter in our lives and do so in a responsible way. So I hope you enjoyed the episode. I hope you stick with us. Thanks for listening. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Little Miss Recap, the podcast where we don't have an iPhone, but we pretend we do.
Oh, yeah.
How about that?
That's weird.
It's the least offensive thing about any of this, but yeah. We'll get into it. Guys, I'm Amy Archer. I'm your host of Little Miss Recap. I'm here with my bestie, my sidekick, Steph, who's going to ride through the journey with me here. Let's tell everybody this story because I practically clockwork oranged you and made you like watch this immediately because I loved it so much, which is usually the opposite. Like you're usually the watcher.
Yes.
And you're telling me what to watch because I take 17 years to get through a show. We all know this.
Yes.
But always. I burned through it.
You did. You really did.
So what are your thoughts? Because everyone knows I love it.
Oh, I loved it too. Aim, I can't stop thinking about it.
I know.
Patrick and I, the other night after we finished it, literally just sat in bed and like stared at each other. Like, what just happened?
It really is like quite the experience. Like, what I'm trying to tell guys, we're talking about baby reindeer. Did I say that?
I don't think we did, but that's okay.
We're talking about baby reindeer. Everybody's talking about baby reindeer.
I know.
And I think like if I had to just summarize why everybody is talking about this, it just takes you on such an emotional ride.
It does, but it also fucks with me in the way that like you want to hate characters, but you empathize and sympathize with them at the same time as hating them. It's so bonkers. Like my mind, I feel like was all over the place. Oh, I'm just saying, like, I just feel like my emotions were all over the place. I was angry. I was laughing. I was sad. I was irate. Like,
I agree. And I'm just, of course, how I view everything is through I view everything through a couple lenses, right? Mm-hmm. So I think my most dominant lens that I view things through, obviously, is that of a mother. Like, I can't shut that off.
I know. Agreed.
Second, I think for me is I really view things through the lens of a fat person. I just do.
I know.
I always do.
I know.
And I don't even know if I'm like conscious of it, but it just happens.
I know.
And
it's weird that you say that though, because I feel like a lot, in a lot of ways I do that as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah, I think like once you've lived that experience.
Yeah.
It's
you can't
really
unlive
hard,
it.
Right. It's really hard to separate anything else. And mm-hmm. I think, you know, one of the other lenses I view everything through, obviously, is that of a writer.
I know.
And this was so well written.
It was wild, wasn't
it? I mean,
it was incredible.
The way that he nested the reveal and the climax, like, I don't know. It was
impeccable, truly.
It was brilliant.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I don't know. Like I said, I laughed, I cried, I sobbed.
Mm-hmm.
We both did. Like it was hard. Did Timmy watch it with you?
Timmy watched the first three or four with me. Like,
oh, really?
The problem was I was watching it at night in bed.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, Timmy does Timmy work. So he sleeps, you know, right away. So he's sleeping, like, so he's watching half of it, and I look over and he's snoring.
Yeah.
So he didn't, like, see the last two, and I feel like I need to sit down with him and make him watch them.
I mean, if he went that far, he has to finish it.
Because I feel
you have to finish it.
That last episode, and guys, do not listen to this unless you've watched the entire show.
Yeah, please.
That last episode is like required viewing for fathers and sons.
Yes.
100%.
Oh my God, it is.
Okay.
I know.
Let's get into this, shall we?
Please.
So this is the story of Donnie Dunn. I only have like high level summary and we'll just kind of go through it and chat as we are. So Donnie Dunn is played by Richard Gadd, who is the actual writer and the person that this really happened to. So he's starring as, you know, just this fictionalized version of himself. And people do that. So I should say that the genesis of Baby Reindeer is that it had happened and then he turned it into a play. And it was, I have to see this fucking
play. I know
play.
I do too. I was thinking the same thing.
Because it's a one-person play and he uses Martha as a stool.
I know.
It is just a stool that he moves around the stage at various points that represents her. And I'm like, that's incredible. And I need to see it. So
I need to see it too.
So memoirists kind of do this. Like there's parts of my, and I'm saying memoirist because he's telling his story, right? Mm-hmm. It's not an actual memoir, but he's telling his story.
Sure.
But, there's parts of my book, and you know this very well, that are fictionalized, or there's characters in there like Pantsuit Pam is kind of a composite character of a bunch of different people. It's not just one person.
Right.
So like he's fictionalizing himself a little bit in this character of Donnie, but I'm sure it's very, very close to real. So the story is of Donnie Dunn, a comedian who tends bar at the local pub. And whenever I'm taking notes about a British show, I always use their words. So he's in a pub.
He's in a pub.
It's not just a bar.
Okay.
We learn that he is a stalker, Martha Scott, who's played by Jessica Gunning. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. He's trying to report her, but something in him is like holding back.
Mm-hmm.
He tells the policeman, like, this has been happening for 6 months. And the guy's like, 6 months?
6 months? I know.
And he's like, it's complicated.
Yeah.
And that's the impetus for the storytelling.
Can I just say how much I love that he also showed all of the really piece of shit parts of him, like of himself.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
But not a lot of people have the courage to do that.
No, I agree. It's really like, this is what I always tell when I'm teaching creative writing, like, if you're writing a memoir, unless you are ready to get down in the mud and really put like yourself out there, people are not going to resonate with you because nobody is all good and all perfect.
Right.
No, so we need to see that.
But he did that so well.
He absolutely does. And it starts here where he's like, okay, I didn't report her.
Yeah.
And so we learn that he's a failed comedian who lives with his ex-girlfriend's mother.
Oh, I know.
And he's unconventionally handsome. Now, I had a problem the entire show with his beard. I kept saying to Timmy, what is going on? Why is his beard so patchy? What is happening there? I didn't know. It was distracting to me at first.
Oh, okay.
And Timmy said, well, some guys just grow beards like that. Like, it just comes in a little patchy and
yeah,
it's not like full, you know,
yeah,
Nick Offerman or whatever. Yeah, yeah, like, yeah, it just, you know. So
the whatever. Hair doesn't grow in all the places.
But you know what I'm going to say?
Just like the wisps on our head, Aim.
But you know what I'm going to say?
All right, go ahead.
I thought he was real hot.
He was real fucking hot.
He was
hot.
Real hot. Okay, so. He's very.
So you're like, he's not conventionally handsome. I'm like, yeah, yes. I think he's fucking
well,
hot.
Well, I don't normally go for conventionally handsome men. I know. So that's a plus plus in my column. He's very self-deprecating, which, again, is endearing.
Mm-hmm.
So the stalking begins when Martha enters the pub one day and she looks down and out and Donnie says he felt pity for her. That's the first emotion he felt for her is pity.
Pity.
And he also, there's this moment in him where he's like, I know that's a terrible, shitty thing to say. So let's talk about the elephant in the room, shall we? Okay. So Martha's a woman of size.
Yes.
And this is, I almost shut it off.
Really?
Yes, because I was like, oh, you're not doing this. You're not doing this. And
see,
I still don't know how I feel about that.
But I think, so I have a different thought on it. I think he cast her as true to character as possible.
Right. We have since come to learn who the real person is.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about that person here. You guys can Google
it.
No. But you're not going to keep this secret very, very long.
No.
So it's come out. And she's a woman of size.
A woman of size.
Person.
Yeah. Right. But I think I didn't have that same reaction that you did.
I did. I did. I felt this at my fucking core.
But like, so what your reaction to, maybe we're talking about two different things. So tell me, what do you mean? Like you felt, did you feel at your core?
I just felt like, oh, of course she's a pathetic stalker and she's fat.
Okay. Okay.
Do you know what I mean? And being the fat girl, like I feel like the world looks at me like this. I don't necessarily feel that way anymore, but I'm 47 and I've had a lot of fucking therapy.
Right.
But for most of my life, this is how I thought immediately that the world viewed me like this. And he validated that when she walks in and he's like, I felt sorry for her. Why'd you feel sorry for her? By looking at her. He felt sorry for her because, and he admits that, you know, because of what she looked like. So I struggled with that a lot.
I know. I get it. I understand.
And, you know, I write a lot in my book about how even when I was at my lowest weight, which, you know, wasn't that low by society standards, I still felt this way in my brain.
Amy,
I still looked like her.
I mean, this might get real weird, but like we just said, as somebody that I've been on both ends of the spectrum and everywhere in between, I still feel like that person.
Yeah,
so I understand what you're like. I still resonate with those thoughts too. I don't know that that's something that ever really escapes you, does it?
I don't think so.
I don't know. And
I mean, I've
had a ton of therapy too, especially, you know, around my weight and confidence and self-esteem and stuff like that. And I still, I mean, I could be a size 2 or a size 18 and I still truthfully still feel the exact same way about myself. It's bonkers.
Yeah, because it just takes so much. I don't know. I don't know how to explain it. It just takes so much work to not feel that way. And I don't know if you can ever undo it fully.
Well, right. And that's like, I don't know that you can either.
So,
especially if you've been, and I'm going to go out on a limb and say, I know very few people of size that have not been persecuted for their size at some point or another by someone.
Yeah, right.
So I think everyone has been abused in some way, shape, or form about their size.
Yeah.
And that's just something that's, I don't know you ever get over.
I agree. So here's the thing. She comes in, she sits down, right? And he takes pity on her and he offers her a cup of tea on the house. And she looks up at him.
I know.
See, here's the thing, guys. When you're a person of size, like, there is so much invisibility that goes with that.
I know.
You are invisible to many people in this world. You may not be invisible to your family or to your friends if you have a good support system around you. Yeah. But you go into a bar and you are invisible with somebody.
Oh, yeah.
You go to work. You're invisible.
You literally just took the words out of my mouth. Like, truly. Yep. I mean, I'm going to be honest. The place that I was most shamed about my weight, believe it or not, was at work.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's terrible.
Yeah, me too. Me too. It's an invisibility that I can't describe unless you've lived through it. It's like I talk about this a lot. I'm reading my book on Patreon and I talk about this a lot. Like, I have been in situations where men have always confided in me about problems in their relationships. And I think a lot of it is because they don't see me as a woman.
Really?
Yes. Yep. 100%.
What do you think?
It's
they
weird.
See you
it's
as?
Weird. There's an androgyny to weight. I can't explain it.
No,
it's
get what you're saying. I'm just curious.
Trust me. You know who I'm talking about at work.
I do.
This person would confide in me all the time. And if I was a size 2 and was super hot, they would not be having that same conversation with me.
I get it.
Like, it's different.
I know. I have had an experience where, like, my boss at work would make fun of my weight.
Yeah. Like, teachers would make fun of my weight when I was in school. Like, it was fucked up.
That's fucked up. See, I was not overweight as a kid. It was an adult for me, but
I started to gain weight when I hit puberty. Mm. So I feel in some ways that I did live as a thin person as a kid. But then once I was in high school, when it really mattered to your self-esteem I was heavier. And I had a teacher say in front of the entire class that I looked fat in the leggings I was wearing. But my point is, within this invisibility, what you're searching for your entire life is somebody who sees you.
Yes.
And she looks up at Donnie at that moment and you're like, oh, fuck. She feels seen.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like,
you know that feeling, like, so immediately.
On the surface, it seems like it's just an act of kindness towards a stranger. And the rhetoric around this, like, that's the way I've heard it framed.
Mm.
But I think it's deeper than that. I think she feels seen. And that's toxic. Like, not toxic. That's addicting, I should say, to somebody in that position. Okay. So let's move forward. So at first, Donnie's eating this up. She's complimenting him constantly. She has this wonderful, infectious laugh. He loves it.
That laugh.
He loves it. And I get it. I love anyone listening to this podcast understands how much I love to be goofy to elicit laughs from you and Amanda. Like, I love when people laugh at what I do and say.
Same.
Yes.
Like, I become like a 12-year-old. Like, the more I make you laugh, the more I want to keep making you laugh.
Right. Like, you just give me somebody who laughs at my jokes and I'm there. So he starts to feel good. And you could kind of see this as bolstering his ego, because he's not, even though, like, we're going to take weight off the table when we talk about him, he's not in the best place either. He doesn't have a lot of self-esteem, and we learn why later. But so he's starting to investigate her a little bit, and he accidentally follows her home one night, and she's been telling him, like, I'm this high-priced lawyer. I hang out with Tony Blair, which, total hottie, if you
I know.
You know, I hang out with, I don't know, Margaret Thatcher star. But she's hanging out with the British royalty, like Wills. She's calling up Wills and Catherine. I don't know, whatever.
She's supposedly, like, loaded and all this
stuff. Has several apartments in different countries.
Yeah. And, I mean, she basically, like, tries to create a persona of all the things she wishes she was.
Yeah, absolutely. So he follows her home. She lives in a dingy, shitty apartment, and she accidentally catches him spying on her because he has no game in the spy.
I know.
No
game. Like, that's another thing. Like, you can tell it wasn't a woman.
I know. We would have the shit down pat. We would have surveillance on this.
We would have known which one of us was going to drive whose car so that if we got caught, they didn't see us in the car. What, you 100%. Know, we would have figured this out.
100%. Yeah. So then one night in the pub, his bros, he works with some real bros, if you know what I'm saying.
Oh, I do. I
hate
them.
His bros are calling Martha his girlfriend, and they're teasing him.
Yeah.
And he kind of jokingly plays along and says something about hanging her curtains. And so
I know this bothered the fucking shit out of me.
So this ratchets up her obsession. And one night he's performing his comedy and she shows up at a show. And they end up bantering in front of the crowd and she starts singing and it actually kind of goes well.
I know, in a weird way.
In a weird way. And afterwards, let's talk about afterwards.
I'm not ready to talk about that.
There's a moment in this alley.
I know.
They have a moment and this is all, oh God, I saw so much of myself in her.
I know.
Because
I already know what you're going to say.
You know what I'm going to say. I just literally finished the chapter where you know who I was. Okay, guys, let me back up. Okay, for people who don't know my book and don't know me. So I wrote a memoir called Fat Girl Skinny, and it's about a period in my life where I was divorcing my first husband, and I was also simultaneously like on a toxic Weight Watchers journey, and I had lost weight, but like the book is about that I never fixed what was upstairs. So I was still like a disaster, right? Mm-hmm. So I meet this. So I'm desperate and I'm lonely because my husband has left me for somebody else. And I look up this old boyfriend from my past who on paper, total no on paper
and in real life.
And in real life. But I'm so lonely and broken and desperate that I cling onto him. And all it takes is him to give me a little breadcrumb. Yeah. And do you know, I still remember that breadcrumb. I remember it exactly. He came to my apartment one night. It was during a blizzard and he had nowhere to go. And he was really drunk from like a party that he had been to. And he came to my house and we spent like 2 days at my house. And like, I took care of him. And that was the pattern I had with my first husband, like the repeating, the taking care of.
Yep.
So this felt normal to me.
Familiar.
Mm-hmm. Well, I ended up making a complete ass out of myself. Like I did the Martha. Like I stalked him.
I was there for it.
It was wild.
I was there.
My point is like that moment in the alley where he's singing to her and she has her head on his shoulder.
I know.
It's this intimate moment that is something to her, but is not necessarily something to him.
Because it's probably for her as a woman of size, the most intimate moment she's ever had with someone.
Right. And I want to
I hope that didn't come out wrong. No, do you know what I'm trying to say though?
No, I understand, but I want to be very clear about something. How do I say this? Like, we're talking about her feeling certain ways as a woman of size. Not every person who's fat feels that way. And I want to be very clear about this.
Yes, yes.
Things have really shifted in our society. And I see young girls who are women of size who own and love their bodies. Yes. And they have a ton of confidence. And I'm so grateful for that shift.
Me too.
And I'm proud of that. And I, you know.
Oh my God, yeah. But
I
that was
think
like
that's
body,
what's happening here.
No, body positivity was not a thing then.
Not a thing. And Martha's about our age.
Yeah.
So like she was raised in the
totally
toxic diet culture that we all were. And okay.
Yep. I know.
But I don't want to keep framing her as that because
I know
that's not the only issue happening here. But I wanted to you know, talk
But we
about
don't
that.
Know that yet. So
we don't know. So what do we think of Donnie's comedy?
Oh, Aim.
It's real bad.
It's real bad.
It's real bad. And I like some fucked up comedy. This is real
bad. Me too. Like I can pretty much find humor in most things, but even this is like there was nothing for me here.
No, I'm not. You know what it reminded me of? Kind of like a cross between Gallagher, who used to smash the watermelons.
Oh.
And like a Stephen Wright, so dry.
Oh, yeah. I don't think I know who he is, but
He's just super dry. Like, he just makes jokes and talks in this voice. And
Okay.
And
like the monotonous.
When Donnie's like, I had a baby and I named it Hitler.
Yeah.
Like that's a very Stephen Wright kind of thing.
My mom died this morning, or whatever he says. My mom just died.
So I think some of it is funny, but like, delivery is not great, dude.
Mm-mm. No, definitely not his strong suit.
So, but I wrote that I thought it was so brave of him to like show that he was failing over and over and over
again. Oh my God, yeah.
And he didn't paint himself as like some super successful comic.
No, right? Because he wasn't. No. And he knows it and he owns it.
So at the same time, he begins dating Terry, who is so beautiful.
So beautiful. I know.
Terry is a woman that he meets on a trans dating site.
Right.
So he's smitten with her. She's gorgeous, but he cannot be honest with her. He lies about his job. Yep. He says he's a builder. He uses an alias. And we see him kind of like really struggling with the fact that Terry is trans, we think.
Yeah.
And we don't realize at this point that it's an internal struggle. We think it's very on the surface, like he's struggling with her being trans, but that's not what it is.
It's not. And like, I did the same thing too. And it was so confusing to me because I'm like, why is he being so weird about this?
Why is he being a dick about it? Right.
But he sought out a trans dating site. Why are you now being like, so that was very confusing for me. Like I was kind of like, what the fuck is he like? This guy's an asshole.
Right. We kind of get the sense that Terry's like the voice of reason in his life, like an anchor for him.
Yeah. Oh, I love Terry.
I do too. So Martha now starts emailing him and the emails are wild.
Wild. Okay.
The constant misspelling. My grammar brain was.
I know. But here's what I don't understand. This is where I was like losing. Like she's obviously educated, right?
Yeah, because she was a lawyer. We find out
she was a lawyer.
He looked her up and she had been a criminal stalker. Like she had been convicted of, but all the headlines are like ex-lawyer, former lawyer. Like she was a lawyer.
Right. But was the misspelling intentional?
So here's how that came off to me.
Okay.
I think that says to me that it's like a frenetic energy. Like she's like anger typing all the time. And you know how, like, my thumbs always get shit wrong.
I know.
And I think she never bothered to correct it because she's not thinking through what she's saying.
But that's what I couldn't figure out, though. Because in hindsight to what you're saying, though, she does that when she's angry. But she also, the same spelling errors happen when she's saying sweet things. So I think it's all
impulsive. Whether it's all driven by impulse, whether it's good sexual
vomit,
anger, like her emotions are not regulated. Mm-hmm. She's not going to type out a text and then be like, oh shit, I have to correct that. Like she's just firing. Wild. That's my opinion. Yeah,
I don't know either. It was just bonkers to me.
Because she's definitely well-educated. Like,
yes.
She knows how to spell the word they. You know what I mean?
But she can speak.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like she, like yeah. That's what I mean. Like it just, it was, that's, that was really the one part that like I couldn't reconcile in my head.
I think it speaks to like her impulsiveness.
Mm.
So she starts showing up now outside his home. Like it gets really crazy. And she's even infiltrates Keely's mother's cooking club.
Whoa, I know.
He's starting to get nervous. And Donnie goes to his bros at the pub and he's like, I need you to bar Martha. Like, I guess this is a thing in the UK. They can ban you from the bar.
Mm-hmm.
In the United States, like in my little rural area where guys are like falling down drunk in bars.
This shit doesn't happen. Don't
do that. No. Instead, they make fun of him. And when he shows them the emails and hands them the phone, they send an email to her saying, I want anal sex. Can we please have anal sex?
Oh, my God.
You know, give it to me in the ass. Whatever.
Did you not want to murder them? This was – so this is where I felt very triggered.
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember being a young person and not even a person of size at this point in my life. But being on the receiving end of a message like that, that you think is coming from somebody that, not a text message, because that obviously wasn't a thing, but just being on the receiving end of something like that, thinking that somebody's saying something to you, but it's really somebody else, like, and they're poking fun, like that was hard. That was real hard for me.
Yeah. Yeah, she took it to heart. She thought, okay, he's into me now.
Yeah, who wouldn't?
But yeah, that's I mean, she has no reason to think that this is coming from somebody else.
I know.
This is where, if I'm going to pick, because I'm so nitpicky, if I'm going to pick one flaw in the narrative, and it's almost flawless.
Uh-huh.
It was this repetitive beat of him not reporting her, him almost being able to stop her, but not quite doing it. Like, they hit that beat a little. A they lot. Went to that well a little too many times.
Yeah, I agree. Like. I agree.
So now things get real bad. And he tells Terry about Martha, and they're hiding out of her place for a while. And he goes to the police, but the police don't really do much. They're like,
eh. That's another. Why were they not taking this seriously? Because it's a woman?
Yes, because yeah. It's a woman stalking a man 100%. Because the cop even said to Donnie, well, did you sleep with her? You know, and he's like, no. And the cop says something in the beginning. I forget what it was, but he said something to the effect of, well, we're not very picky. Like, that's never stopped us before that you're not attracted to her. Do you know? It's gross.
It was gross.
It's kind of the same narrative that we see around teachers and students. Like, when it's Mary Kay Letourneau and that boy, I forget his name. I don't remember either. You know, it's kind of like, oh, you know, good for him getting the hot teacher.
Yeah.
No, it's child abuse.
It's disgusting.
So Donnie goes to police, whatever. They say they'll talk to her about it, but I don't think they do. So one night, he and Terry are having a lovely dinner at the pub. And Martha comes in and she attacks Terry.
Oh, she goes like fucking batshit.
She is terrifying. And I think this is the first time Donnie really sees her.
Yeah.
And is like, oh, fuck.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah. Martha shouts out all sorts of transphobic slurs and physically assaults Terry. Terry is left. It's a really strong visual. She's like left on the ground, literally pieces of like broken dinnerware around her. Her hair's pulled out. And she's like she's just like an injured deer or something.
Yeah,
Do you know what I mean?
It was really off. That was a tough scene. That was tough.
It was a tough scene. And I think this is what I'm talking about, the frustration. The fact that he didn't go to the police right then.
Right then, I know. Like, what the fuck is it going to take?
Right.
Right?
So the bar bros finally bar her from the pub. They're like, okay, we can't have her beating shit out patrons. Like, this is, we're drawing the line.
Yeah.
And Donnie doesn't report this to the police, and neither does Terry. And it's
why doesn't Terry?
I thought about this.
Me too, and I can't figure it out.
I wonder if just knowing some of the trans people in my life, like, I wonder if it's a sense that unfortunately police don't take crimes against trans people seriously. Like, we know that doesn't happen in this country.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah.
And so there's this silencing that kind of happens, almost like why women don't report rape a lot. You know what I mean? Like, nobody's going to believe me, or they'll think I deserved it, or.
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. You're right.
I think there's a little bit of that.
It's so, I didn't even think of it that way.
Mm-hmm,
like, shame on me. I should have. I truly didn't even know, but you're 100% right. Like, this is a conversation that people need to be having, because that never even dawned on my mind. Like,
I mean, I don't know.
But you're probably right.
I'm just guessing.
I hadn't looked at it from that lens, though. That's terrible.
So episode 4 is a real turning point in the series. Were you watching like this, like through your fingers? Because I was.
Yeah.
We sense that Donnie's confused. We sense shame, especially around his sexuality, but we don't really know where this is coming from. And Terry senses it, and she calls him right out on his bullshit. And she's like, you're getting something from Martha, or you wouldn't be doing this.
Yes.
You wouldn't be letting it happen. You would have shut it down, is what she says.
And she's not wrong, I don't think.
No. What do you think he's getting from it, though? Is it just an ego boost?
I think so.
Yeah. I think he feels sorry for her.
Well, I do too. Exactly. I do think that he feels sorry for her, but I do think there's something intoxicating about somebody. Like, I guess when I'm trying to put myself in his shoes, I'm struggling with my sexuality. I struggle with my relationship with my father, blah, blah, blah. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, is there a part of him that really did that feel like love?
Yeah, that's a good point. And I also think, too, people don't realize how hard it is sometimes to put boundaries down when you feel responsible almost for somebody.
Yes.
And I think at his core, maybe he felt some responsibility for her.
Well, right.
Because he knew he was kind of complicit.
Yeah, because he knows that he kind of opened the door and kind of let it happen.
Like, there's so many times, there's relationships that I've been in, I'm sure you feel this way too, it's not clear, it's not black and white who's wrong and who's right. So when that is, when those lines are blurred, I think it's really hard to say, I need to end this.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to be real black and white in a situation like that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, all right, now we get his backstory, and this pulls a lot of threads together.
Goosebumps.
So we see him 5 years earlier, and he's going to Edinburgh to perform in a festival of some kind. This is in Scotland. Mm-hmm. I don't really know what this is, but he gets a reoccurring gig in this pub. And after a bunch of failed nights, the bartender slips him a VIP card, giving him access to an exclusive bar. This is not like the exclusive bar that I went to. Can we talk about this for a second? I was once in a quote unquote after hours bar in Scranton, Pennsylvania. My friend Jen and I thought we were hot shit getting into this bar. So we go, we knock on the door. It's like 2:30. You have to use a password, whatever. We get in. No one there is under 60. No. Okay, and we're like 20, 22, 23. There's an Elvis impersonator who's just singing all the hits, and the women are like practically throwing their panties at him.
I can't.
It was the weirdest thing that has ever happened to me. Like, I still look back on that and I'm like, was that real?
I know.
Hey, everyone, stay tuned. Little Miss Recap will be right back after these words.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. You guys know I'm a huge fan of therapy, but what you may not know is you don't need to be in crisis to get help. See, we all carry around stressors, big and small, whether it's stuff at work, stuff with our kids, caring for our parents, even navigating friendships. Therapy is a safe place to work through those challenges. Therapy has also been a lifeline as I parent my teenage daughters. Working through some of my own stuff has made me a better mom. If you're thinking of starting, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and it's designed to fit your schedule. BetterHelp matches you with a licensed therapist who fits your needs, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/littlemissrecap today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/littlemissrecap. So this is not that. This is actually like a cool, swanky bar where there's like celebrities and, you know, whatever.
It's the kind of bar you want the pass to.
not the Elvis impersonator bar.
No.
No. Mm-mm. So he meets Darian, who is the writer of his favorite show. I don't know what this show is. I'm thinking they're just using a fake show, obviously, because they're trying to conceal this guy's identity. I don't even think he wrote a show. I think it's a... people pretty much know who it is.
Okay.
And the guy's like threatening to call the police and stuff. So I'm not going to say his name here.
Oh, shit.
But we think it's a playwright. Let's just put it that way.
Okay.
Darian starts to show interest in Donnie, and they're spending a few weeks working on his comedy act. And we see like his comedy act gets a little better.
Yeah.
And Darian's giving him tips. And Darian, it's very important to understand that Darian is very successful and there is a power dynamic here.
Big time. And he also seems like they're like polar opposites, right? So like Darian is like the guy that has his life together. And like so I think there's some draw to that.
Darian
as well.
Is who Donnie wants
to be. Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So they become friends. And Darian is kind of very subtly, we know this is grooming, he's kind of dangling this carrot.
I know.
So then he disappears. Just gone.
Where does he go?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
A few months later, Donnie's in acting school, which is hilarious.
It is pretty hilarious.
He meets Keeley there.
Yeah.
And it's just pretty funny. Darian resurfaces and he invites Donnie to come over and write with him. And after a while, they take some drugs and Darian suggests it. And Donnie feels obligated because here's this guy talking about I could possibly be his writing partner.
Yeah.
And everything that I have ever wanted in my entire life is right in front of me.
Yep. Yep.
So he does drugs. And, you know, again, the idea of success and connections being dangled the entire time. Donnie gets sick and ends up puking in the dog bowl, the cat bowl. Is it a cat or dog?
Oh, my God. It's a cat. It was a great cat.
Mm-hmm. Listen to you. It's a gray cat.
It was a gray cat.
With tiger stripes and an orange nose.
It was all gray. I actually don't remember his name, though. But he did say he was in love. They were in love, like as a joke.
He's an adorable cat.
Real cute.
But while Donnie's like on the ground puking, Darian touches him sexually. And it's Donnie freezes. The acting. Can we talk about the acting?
I know. It was.
He's an incredible actor.
Incredible.
He did that whole scene just through face.
I know.
Not a word was said.
No.
It was incredible. Insane. So the next day, guess what? Because this is the pattern of these abusers, right? Like, I've done something. We're not going to talk about that. Instead, I'm going to direct you over here.
I know.
To remind you of this good thing I have over here. So the next day, guess what? The network's interested in your show.
I know.
So Donnie has pitched the show called Hangman Harry. It's actually pretty funny, but whatever. I think Netflix should make that show.
They should now, right? I know.
So he's like, the channel's interested. Let's write it. Like, let's start. So they start working and they're writing every single weekend. And Darian is just plying him with drugs and meth, coke, crack,
everything. It's truly disgusting.
All the while, he's giving him these brutal rewrites. Like, the script is never good enough, never good enough, never good enough.
Like, he's abusing him in, like, every way possible.
It's
mentally, physically, sexually. It's disgusting.
He's keeping him in, like, a suspended state of exhaustion almost.
Yeah.
Mentally, physically, to groom him way that he's grooming him. It was really hard to watch.
So hard to watch.
Because you know what's coming. You know what's coming.
And you're just waiting for it.
Yep. So one night they take acid and Donnie has a bad trip.
Yeah.
And he's raped. He is raped, period.
He is.
He stays afterwards with Darian for days, unsure how to go forward. And he really beats himself up over this. And I just want to say, I feel that almost like a analysis paralysis situation.
Yes.
I totally think that could be normal. You know, feeling like I don't know what to do.
So
I'm going to do nothing. I'm just going to stay
and pretend it didn't happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I totally understand that. That was the part that was so disturbing is like you wanted to be like, what the fuck are you doing? But then at the same time, I'm like, I probably would have done the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's such an interior look at trauma. It really is incredible.
And
I know I keep saying it's incredible, but it's incredible.
No, but it was. But honestly, you guys, like, there's something about being able to look at yourself through this lens and be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like he was just so honest. Right. And I don't know that, obviously. But, there was something that you could feel about it.
It was raw.
Yeah.
It was raw.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I talk about this all the time. Go into a room of 100 women and ask, have any of you been sexually assaulted? Yeah. And probably 99 will raise their hand.
Yeah.
Us included.
Included, yeah.
And you do question yourself afterwards.
Yeah.
If I didn't do this, if I didn't do that. Like, that is very normal.
100%.
And we see him doing that. So there's a lot of that going on. This leads to what is characterized as a period of sexual confusion. And he's saying he doesn't know if it's, you know, because of the rape that he's just sexually confused. And, you know,
traumatized.
Absolutely. And I do want to be careful here because a friend of mine that I spoke to and, you know, I really, really value their opinion. They were like, you know, I worry that the show kind of characterizes like, okay, I've had sexual trauma and now I think I might be trans or date a trans person or be bi or be gay, whatever.
Oh, I didn't get that, but I know what you're saying.
So I want to, you know, I just want to address that. I think that is a valid concern.
Yeah.
And, but I think my, the way I perceived it is that this sexual confusion was happening before. But oh my God, yeah. It feels deep seated. Like it feels like it was probably happening in his teens and 20s. And
he like ignored it or tried to ignore it.
Yeah. Sure. And this kind of brought it to the surface. And if you know, like I know people in my life who are male who've been raped and sexually assaulted. And I remember this person like saying to me, am I gay? You know what I mean? Like I do think there is. Because we just have such stringent viewpoints in this country, at least, or in society of
sexuality
and masculinity.
Sure.
And so I think it really, it fucks you up, you know? Yeah. And I just, I thought it was, I don't know. All right.
I know there are no, like, it's so hard to find the right words. It really is. Excuse me.
So he goes into a shame spiral. Is the best way to describe this. And he says, Martha turned up during this time and she saw him how he needed to be seen in the moment. Mm-hmm. So again, this is, you know, now we know that him meeting Martha was after this rape and during this period of real shame and confusion. And he says, this is why he said, when it came to the point of going to the police, I just couldn't stand the irony of reporting her and not him.
Oh, my God. Tell me that's not so powerful.
It's so powerful because he's right. He's
100%. I get it. Like when he says that, it's like it like hits me in the head with like being whacked in. And I'm like, oh, I get it. Like being whacked inside the head. You're like, oh.
Suddenly you're like, this is why he never reported her.
Yeah.
Because he still feels guilt
over
the rape. It's wow.
It's wild.
So, all right. Donnie says there was a sense that she was ill, that Martha was ill, that she couldn't help it. Whereas he was a pernicious, manipulative groomer. And to admit to her was to admit to him, and I hadn't admitted him to anyone yet. The writing again.
Okay. I know.
So Martha, meanwhile, is so angry about being barred, and she attacks Keely, and she throws soda in her face. And you know, Donnie's kind of like, "Well, it was just Diet Coke in your face. What's the big deal?" But Keely's like, "No, no, 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 no!" Like, and she's right. This is a boundary. Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's abusive. You can't just throw Diet Cokes at people.
And it's terrifying. And this is when he has to admit, like, okay, I've been being stalked. And Keely's mom asks him to move out. She's I can't have you here.
I know. And I could, you know, what was weird about this too, is like, even the storyline with this mom was powerful. And like, she's not even in it that much.
I agree.
You feel all of the feels. I don't know what he did when he was writing this or whatever, but like he nails every fucking point. Like
she was a nurturer in his life when he needed a nurturing, which makes you wonder what is going on with his parents.
I know.
Like we see his mom and she seems perfectly lovely, but there's almost a sense of she doesn't know the real him.
Right. So I got the sense that he grew up in like that typical, like, I don't want to say typical, that stereotypical home of like where the dad was like the iron fist and the mom did whatever the dad said and he wasn't allowed to come out with his sexuality because that would be wrong. And that's how, that was what I was getting, but I could totally have fabricated that in my own head too, because we don't really know.
Right. But right. The dynamic feels like that.
Yeah, it does.
Feels
like even
he's so afraid of embarrassing them or letting them down or
like
I don't know.
Filled with shame. But even when he, in that scene where he's talking to the parents, right? You want me to stop?
The scene where he comes out to them in the end?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's save that because I want to talk extensively about that.
Okay.
So Martha's angry about being Bard. She throws soda. Okay. So he has to move in with like a dubstep sex situation with these young guys who are just partying constantly. Yeah. Like it is up in the club at the house all the time. And he says he starts spending more time with Terry, but he's having some sexual like problems and he can't have sex with her. He can't make love to her. Right. Mm-hmm. Because he says he sees sex as something violent now. Mm-hmm. And I totally get that. And I even looked up a study because I really wanted to see, like, is this a real thing? So this is a study that looked at sex and sexuality after sexual assault. And it says research on sexual assault shows survivors experience various sexual problems post-assault, including sexual dysfunction and a decrease in sexual satisfaction. An early study of 372 sexual assault survivors discovered 71% of women who had a history of sexual trauma attributed their sexual functioning issues to their assault. Mm. So, I mean, we know it happens with women. There's not a ton of studies done with men, but you can imagine it also happens with men.
Of course it does.
So this is a common thing. And just
to think that it doesn't happen to men is the problem.
Right. It absolutely happens to men. Absolutely. Yeah. Yep. So, you know, they're less likely to want romantic sex, and survivors are also more likely to engage in risk behavior. Mm-hmm. And we see that he kind of does this. He goes through this period of time where he's like just having sex in dangerous places. And you know, after the assault, we saw that happened.
Yeah.
So now Donnie goes to the police, and this time he tells them Martha's last name, and he's like, look her up, dude. Like, there's a problem here.
Yeah.
So they look her up and they're like,
I know.
They give Martha no contact order. He's confused because he feels like, am I going to miss her? Like, I've come to.
I know. Well, you come to rely on that presence as comfort almost, right? In a weird way.
Yes. And again, I think in the back of his mind is this, Darian belongs in jail.
Yeah.
So does Martha, I guess, but Darian first. Like, it's this whole.
I know. It's terrible.
So the police ask him to do things, this detective Joanne, like write up a timeline and da-da-da, and he drags his feet the entire time.
Big time. I know.
Now they get a full, she says, if we get more evidence, we can get a full restraining order. So now Martha starts fucking with his parents. She's calling them, saying that he's been in an accident. He has to go out there. He's, you know, explaining everything that happened to the parents. The dad's hilarious. The dad is on the phone like, fuck you, you motherfucking. Just reaming her constantly.
That was great.
So then he decides. So when he's at the parents' house, they call the police. The police come and they're basically like, can't really do anything. Again, can't really do anything. So he's like, I'm taking matters into my own hands. Mm-hmm. And he entraps her. He meets up with her and he's like, put in an email all the dirty shit you want me to do to you. She does it.
I know.
He sends it to the police. And guess what? She has been to the police. She has been recording everything. It's wild. It's wild.
Why was she doing that?
I don't know.
Like, that's something that I don't understand. Like, because I really do believe in some weird way that she loved him.
I also think she's smart.
I know.
I don't know.
That's what I mean. Like, it was so calculated, but also so unhinged.
At the same time.
This is where it gets weird for me. Like, we were talking a couple minutes ago about the misspellings and how they were just flying out there, which they... Mm-hmm. By your theory, like they were. But at the other time, this whole thing is also very calculated because, again, we find out she's recording it. She's like, so it's like, I wondered, like, there was a point during the story that I wondered, does she have like multiple personalities?
Mm. Like, well, all something, of these. Something's
no, 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 but that's truly like that came into my head. Like, is she like different personas? Because we've seen that. And I mean that, you know what I mean? Like mental illness and stuff, but I don't know. It's wild. I wonder
if it's almost like, this is going to sound depraved, but you know, my mind can go there. I wonder if she's like recording him to like preserve it and to like,
I know,
listen back to it and be like, you know, like, I don't know.
I know.
I don't know.
Or was she like recording him to set him up? Like, we don't know.
I don't know.
Recording him to like, was there this intention behind it the whole time that she wanted to stalk him, but knew that she needed to cover her own ass like that. But they're all, these are the things that are going like,
but I don't think she thinks he's stalking her.
No, 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 no. No, no, no.
I don't think she thinks that she's stalking him is what I mean. I think that she just has a lawyerly brain.
And yes, that's just what I mean.
Has like, a propensity for collecting evidence.
Yeah, it's why. But that's what I'm like, this is what's so hard about watching it is you're trying, like for me, I was trying to like, okay, is she mentally ill? Does she have multiple personalities? Is she doing it because of like, but you don't know, like all of these things you are going know. Through my head because I just want to, like, I'm trying to empathize with her. So I'm trying to like put into my head like why did she do this? So I don't know. It's so
I know
it's fucked up.
It's so complex, and that's what I like about it because there's never simple answers to this kind of shit.
No, but that's what I mean. So like the entire time I'm like running through. Okay, it must be this. Okay, well maybe it's this. Well, what is it? It's there really is no fucking answer.
No. Mm-mm. So. His relationship with the police are like, we're done with you too.
No, they
like,
fucking, whatever. I know. They're not taking any of this seriously. No, which, nope.
And I really believe it's because it's coming from a man.
I do too. But it also really fucking pissed me off though, that even after they found out who she was and what she had previously done, that they still don't do anything about it.
Well, they did what they could, but like, he's not helping himself. That's part of the problem.
I know.
Like, are you going to cooperate with us or are you not? He still is not doing the timeline.
I know.
So it's tough. So his relationship with Terry falls apart now because he asks her to hide herself. And she basically is like, this is taking something from me.
Yeah.
And I get this. Like, this is asking a trans person to undo the visibility that they have earned.
Yes.
No. Mm-mm. And I love that she told him to fuck off. Like, me I too. Love that she was like, I'm done. Mm-hmm. And she's a therapist, so she sees this.
I know. She was so great.
So now Martha comes back into the pub, and she and Donnie have an altercation, and she smashes a glass upside his head. Then he goes to his comedy show and has a full-on breakdown the stage.
How about how he punches her in the face, though?
I know. I know. It's wild.
Not that, like, it was just the whole thing. It just happened so fast. I was like, oh, my God.
I know. His comedy monologue about he tells the entire audience how he's groomed and raped. And that is, submit that for his Emmy reel.
Please. Because
that was unbelievable.
That was wholeheartedly one of the most powerful scenes on screen
that I've seen. That I've
probably
time.
Ever seen.
Yeah.
Yep. At least in a very, like, in a very long time.
Yes.
And it might stay up there for a real long time because
it
that
was unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
In the finale, so that was episode 6, and I highly recommend everyone watch it. The acting is top notch. So in the finale, we learn that this breakdown has gone viral.
Yep.
And he enters a period of success, and he seems to be riding high, and Martha's gone, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we get this sense of solace, only to be broken by a sudden phone call from Martha. So we see that in this period of success, like, a lot of outlets are reaching out to him being like, what's your number? We want to interview you. So she must have done that, and he sent his number to her. She threatens to call his parents and tell him about the rape. So again, these parents, so disconnected from reality, are in this bubble where they haven't seen this viral video.
I know.
None of their friends called him up?
I know. I was thinking that too. So like, how viral could it have been?
Like, if this was one of your kids, I'd call you and be like,
yeah.
You need to turn on YouTube.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or, so, yeah, I mean.
But we get the sense like his parents' estate is almost characterized as like this break and space away from everything. Because he even like takes his phone apart and goes up there and is off the grid. Like, it's off the grid, I guess, is what I'm saying. And he decides he's going to tell his parents, and it is a heartbreaking scene.
It's heartbreaking.
This is where he comes out to his parents, and he says at one point, you either have to accept a gay son or a dead one. And I'm sobbing.
Sobbing. Me too.
Like, bed shaking, sobbing.
Me too.
So what did you want to say about this scene? Because you brought it up earlier.
All right. No. So what I was trying to say earlier, though, is that you see there's an interaction with them when he's speaking to them. And he's spilling all of this, he's vomiting all of his confessions, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the parents are both just sitting there, and the father's face is like stone cold, like nothing is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And the mother's doing all the talking. We love you. It's okay, right? And you see, like, she keeps many times, maybe not many, but at least enough that, like, I picked up on it. It might have only been once. But, like, you could see her almost looking at the father for approval as she's comforting the son, her son.
Okay, so can I speak to this? Because this felt real, real to me.
Okay.
Because in my family, you know this, in my immediate family, I am the emotional center of my family.
Mm-hmm.
And I am the one who handles, quote unquote, all of the emotional stuff. And that kind of stuff is very hard for Timmy. It just is. Like, that's the kind of person he is.
Right.
So I felt seen here, because what she's doing is she's acting like the emotional spokesperson for the parents.
Right.
And I have been in this position many times where I'm like speaking for us as a unit.
Right.
To the kids and kind of, you know, checking in with Timmy visually.
Yeah.
To make sure, like, I'm saying this. Are you okay with this?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I guess so, as the viewer, though, that could go either way.
Sure. Absolutely.
And for me, I didn't see it that way. I saw it more of like he's this stronger, more authoritative figure that they're both a little bit intimidated or afraid of. And that's where a lot, like, it felt like more like of a timid, timid feeling more than her just checking it. That's how I took it anyway. But again, it's, I guess it's up for
you could be totally right. Who knows? I could be projecting my own dynamic onto that. I could totally see that way as
and
well.
And I could be projecting mine, although that's not the dynamic in my house, but it was.
So now we learn that the dad was also abused.
I know. And I did not. I was not prepared for that.
That's generational trauma right there.
I know.
Insane. And dad, you know, he kind of says to him, like, do you think that I'm less of a man? And that's how it comes out. And just like I said, required viewing for fathers and sons. Because they really challenge that idea of masculinity around sexual assault. And it's so well done.
It's so well done. So well done.
So he spends like a really healing weekend with his parents. Like, it's just kind of lovely. And I wrote, like, I remember when I was going through my divorce and
I'm sorry. I interrupted you. Go ahead.
I remember when I was going through my divorce, like, it was really traumatic for me. And I spent a weekend like that at my dad's house.
Yeah.
And I kind of just let him take care of me.
What I was going to say is I remember that weekend for you. Like, I remember when you went there.
Yeah, it was so nice. It was so nice. Like, you and I were just having a conversation about this yesterday, and I was kind of saying to you, like, somebody in your life needs this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes people just need a respite
to
heal, to reset.
Just to reset.
To just be like, I need to get back in touch with myself. Mm-hmm. I need to, you know what I mean? And it's so lovely.
And
that's
sometimes I think it's just, you just need to be loved.
Yeah, you need to feel loved.
Loved, that's what it is.
Yes, 100%. Mm-hmm. So,
and that's what I was saying like earlier, that I do feel in some way that he did feel some kind of a love from her.
Oh, yeah. I think it started that way.
Yeah.
But when you don't, I think the thing is when you don't know what healthy love looks like.
Exactly.
And he doesn't. And we don't know why. Do you know what I mean? Like, we need to know more about the dynamic with his parents to understand why he doesn't have an idea.
I know.
Of what healthy love looks like. Like, did it start with the rape? Maybe. I don't know.
But see, for me, that's why I kind of feel like it was way more before that. Like, I think it had more to do with like the dynamic of the parents.
Maybe.
Like, something about that dad rang not abusive, but just
authoritarian.
Richard
Gadd, you need to give us a prequel to this.
Please, God,
we need your upbringing. He needs to write a book.
Yes.
Yeah. So on his way home, he plugs his phone back in and Martha's left like 50 voicemails and they're real bad. So he goes to the cops and the cop is like, dude, just let this keep happening until you get enough evidence. She'll eventually say something that crosses a line. Like, why didn't anybody think of this before?
I know, right?
So he starts listening to her voicemails and he becomes obsessed with them.
Yep.
and he starts sorting and cataloging them, and he almost becomes a recluse, and Keely has to swing by and invite him to live back at her mom's because she's like, this is not a good environment for you.
I do want to say, though, that I loved that she did that.
I did, too.
There was something really endearing.
Like, she loved him.
Yeah.
She might not now, like, in a romantic way, but she loved him.
But she cared. Yeah.
Yep. So then Martha leaves a voicemail threatening his parents, and this is it. And she gets arrested. She goes to jail. She pleads guilty. She gets a 9-month prison sentence. He goes to the hearing.
I know.
And
tell me what you thought about her every time she said guilty. Did a little piece of your heart break every time she said guilty and she cried? Because I was crying for her.
He created a 3-dimensional character.
I know.
We did not.
I know.
It is not black and white. Like, if you think you're just going to hate her because she's a quote unquote psycho.
Psycho. Yeah, no.
That's not what this character is at all.
At all.
She's complex. She's dynamic. Like, she's interesting.
I know.
So he moves back home. Into Keely's mother's home. Mm-hmm. And he finds the script he had been working on with Darian. And this leads him to go back to Darian's. And we're all screaming.
Screaming.
No. No, no. Please stop. Please stop. Please stop.
Why?
It's Darian's like
punishing himself.
Yep. Darian presents him with an opportunity to write with him again and says it won't be like last time.
Oh my God.
And Donnie says yes.
Why?
I have a theory about this. I think he said yes in the moment, but I don't think he ever.
That's what I need to know. Back. Did he go back or did he dream that he did that? Like, what happened?
On his way home, he is shook and he's crying.
Mm.
And he starts listening to Martha's kinder voicemails, reminding him of how sweet he is, how great his smile is, baby reindeer, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. It seems to calm him. And at the end, he stumbles into a bar. And he orders a pint and he can't pay for it. And the bartender shows him some kindness and offers him a pint on the house. And meanwhile, he's listening to an unheard voicemail from Martha in which she explains her baby reindeer was like her emotional support toy when she was a little kid and her parents would fight and he starts sobbing. Mm-hmm. And that's how we end. I don't think he goes back to Darian. I don't.
I have to hope that he doesn't.
I don't.
I have to hope that he doesn't. And now I need to know.
I think what he was trying to show, like, we don't know if that is exactly the way it happened in real life. This could be creative license. I think what he's trying to show is that thread is never dead. Yeah. You know, like that power dynamic and that hold that Darian once had on him is still there and might always be.
Right.
But it's left ambiguous as to whether or not
he goes through with it.
Does it.
Yeah.
And I don't think he does.
I hope not. We don't know.
But in the end, it's so interesting because he, of course, the obvious thing is that he's replaying what Martha did, right? He's going into a pub, somebody's showing him a moment of kindness.
Yeah.
But so he's
putting himself in her shoes.
But there's also this like this sense that she was broken.
Yeah.
And so was I.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh, it's unbelievable. I know.
It's unbelievable. Mm. There are words don't do this any justice. Mm-mm. Nothing we've said here will do any justice. Please just watch it.
And I think, you know, we brought up a lot of the themes I want to talk about, like the shame and sexual assault, the othering, you know, feeling othered, the intersectionality of vulnerability and desperation. Like, just, I've been there. I'm sure you've been there. We've been there.
Mm-hmm.
At the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, Baby Reindeer won the Scotsman Fringe First Award for New Writing and Stage Award for Acting Excellence. The show then had a 5-week run in London before transferring to the West End, but was, canceled due to the COVID pandemic. However, the play won the prestigious Olivier Award for Outstanding Achievement in Affiliate Theater and now has become the basis of a 7-episode Netflix drama.
It's so good.
Richard Gadd, I wrote, is an incredible writer who understands and showed us the nuance of sexual assault, especially male sexual assault. He tackles shame, mental health, othering, all of those things with grace. And he's an amazing writer.
This is a must watch.
Must watch. 10 period. Out of 10.
Mm-hmm. 10 out of 10. Or
like somebody who leaves us a review. 4 out of 5 stars. It was so amazing. Okay, well, how do we earn the 5th star? What do we do? This is a full 10 out of 10.
It is. Oh my God, it was so good.
Like, I think I need to rewatch it.
I don't know that I want to.
Ooh.
Because okay. I feel like if I rewatch, like, I think I need to leave it in that space.
Oh, okay. I totally get that.
You know
totally
what I mean? Yep. It was so good and it shook me in so many ways. I don't think I want to be shaken in those ways again.
Yeah.
At least not yet. Like, a lot of it was hard for me because as somebody that we've all, you know, been, not all, but most of us have been, you know, on the end of receiving sexual assault. Some of that was really hard for me to watch.
Absolutely.
And I don't know that I can go back to it.
It's very triggering, especially if you're a survivor of sexual assault. It 100%.
Is. It was really hard for me.
There are a lot of people, you know, because a lot of people in our Facebook group and stuff have been talking about this. And there's many people who can't watch this. And I totally understand.
No, totally.
Woman reached out and asked me, like, I'm about to watch episode 4, but it's going to be very triggering. And I just kind of said to her, watch the first 10 minutes. You don't need to see the assault. You know what's coming.
Yeah.
Just watch the first 10 minutes. Get the idea of the dynamic between he and Darian, and then skip to episode 6. Yeah.
But for me, though, I really do think that, I mean, I would watch it again if I had to. I'm just saying it was so good that I don't think I need to watch it again.
You know how you and I, we do this a lot. We'll call each other, we'll text each other, and we'll be like, I just finished blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. I wish I can unknow it and then watch it again for the first time. That's what I wish.
Me too.
I wish know, I could kind of watch it for the first time again.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, it's not going to hit the same. So I just want to leave it where it is.
Another thing I want to say about it is it's so different.
It's so different.
Like, it's like, not the usual stuff that's out. It's a half hour. It's got funny parts. It's self-deprecating. It's so many things.
But the thing is, too, those half hour episodes – feel like they take forever for some reason.
Yeah.
Like you're watching, and I'm like, this had to have been like 2 hours long, and it was like 27 minutes.
Yeah.
Like it's one of those things that, like, when I was watching, I'm like, oh, Aim, I'll be able to power through that. I couldn't.
You couldn't.
No, I don't know why. I couldn't.
It's so good. It's so good.
Oh, so good. I'm so glad I watched it. I probably won't watch it again for reasons that I just said. I want to leave it in that space.
I understand. I'm trying to think if there's been a show in the last couple years that I felt that way about that just moved me on such a deep level that I couldn't, like, I know I always talk about this. The movie The Hours was that for me.
Oh, me too.
But I can watch that 150 times.
Me too.
I'm trying to think if there's a show that, like, you know, I don't know. I have to think about it. The Affair. I haven't been able to go back and watch The Affair.
I haven't watched
for different reasons and only season one.
No, I haven't watched it either. And you know what else I can't rewatch? And this is like not even in the same category.
Oh,
Parenthood.
No. Oh yeah. Cause you want to be a braver man.
Yeah. I can't, but like, I want to remember that. Like, I don't want to rewatch it and be like, oh, this is so cheesy. Like
we don't touch it. We don't give it the Virgin River treatment,
but that's what I'm saying. It needs to stay on its beautiful pedestal on the shelf. Like, it has to stay there because I don't want to tear it down.
I totally get it. I totally get it
there.
Guys, this podcast, this entire community that we've created is not possible without you guys. So if we've said something that you want to challenge us or we got something wrong, you know, these are a lot of sensitive topics here. Please reach out. We value any feedback that you give us. And, you know, that's how we learn and move forward. So, you know, I know we talked about sexual assault. We talked about rape. We talked about trans identity. So like any of that, if we got something wrong, please reach out. You know, let's have a discussion about it. I welcome that.
Yeah,
me too. Absolutely.
For sure.
Let me tell you what's going on Patreon real quick. We are doing the Jinx. Tess Brigham from Psych Legal Pop and I are doing the Jinx. We're going to do all of season 1 as one big episode and then season 2 week by week. And that is going to drop later today for the first time. Also, we're doing Love During Lockup and we're doing 90 Day Love in Paradise and Sister Wives. So all of that's on Patreon. If you want to jump over there and support the show, please do. Steph and I will be back at you with Virgin River.
Virgin River,
I hope you guys are getting into the Virgin River recaps.
I think they will.
I think they will too.
And I'm hoping that they do, because when the new season comes out, I really, really, really want all of our backdoor friends to take part in this.
Me too.
Because I feel like everyone is so dedicated to Sister Wives and 90 Day and all the reality. You want the same
kind
trash.
Of love for Virgin River.
I need the same love for Virgin River because it deserves it. It has its own place. It does.
It does. Okay.
Virgin River has its own place, and it deserves to be loved by our friends.
I agree. All right, guys. Thank you so much. Please check out our Facebook group, Backdoor Friends. Follow us on Instagram at Little Miss Recap, and we will see you next time. Thanks.
Love your bones.
Bye.
Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.